Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we just watched Season 7, Episode 3, titled The Queen's Justice. There's a lot of justice going around this episode. The Queen gets a little bit of her justice in the mix. I think Elena gets some justice in the mix.
It's just ice.
Just ice.
Yep. And fire being brought together.
Melisandre. Yeah. What'd you think of the episode?
What a great episode. Okay, it's a fun episode. It's a tense episode. Yeah. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, same thing. I thought it was really good.
Like, I honestly, I've been worried about the Danny and John meeting for the first time, that it would be like super corny, or they'd immediately start making moony eyes at each other, or that Danny would come across as hottie, and a little bit, but it all made sense. Like, I felt like, I'm glad they devoted the whole episode to kind of their meeting and the different power games and mind games they're playing with each other, and Dany's style contrasting with John's style, and then Tyrion's able to kind of float between the two, be the matchmaker, be the parent trap, like you said.
Yeah.
He's parent trapping them. Mm-hmm. And it's working. So I thought that that was really cool.
Yeah, it seemed like it. I think, man, I couldn't believe how dense John was at points during this episode.
Well, he's at least half Stark.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. The people always say, you know, the Starks are honorable and the Starks are loyal. And some people will say the Starks are dumb, and then people will be quick to jump in and say, they're not dumb, they're just honest. And no, they're fucking dumb.
So what's the stupidity tonight?
It's him not getting through his thick head that Tyrion is trying to get him to ask for something less
than
full commitment on the Northern Front.
Right,
like,
right.
Come on.
What's a baby step towards your position, Jon Snow?
Yeah, yeah, and he just was not getting it. Tyrion had to spell it out.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is like Yeah, you would have thought that John would have brought up the Dragonglass like towards the beginning. And also, why do you think John cut him off? I thought I thought Davos was right to run his full resume. Like, he's Unbreaker of Hearts and coming back from the dead and washing his hair back from the dead. Like,
yeah,
she's not the only one who's the unburnt or whatnot.
Right, right. You would think someone who was who essentially avoided death and against all odds would understand, but I think what he was worried about there is, look, man, we're already requesting the moon here. Mm-hmm. Let's not ask for Saturn as well.
Yeah,
like, let's not ask her to swallow this other thing.
It is also kind of rich from Dany to be so dismissive of an army of the dead when she herself brought dragons into this world by setting herself on fire with a bunch of petrified eggs, and she's seen the warlocks. I mean, like, who the fuck are you, lady? That, like, oh, army of the dead's too far. Like, come on. I get that we've all just accepted the dragons are a real thing, but you did bring them to life in a magical fire with your lover and some dead witch.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a pretty tough sell, too.
Yeah.
If you were to just tell someone that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I thought that a little bit, but you know who had the biggest stick up their ass? The biggest dick stick up their ass?
Who's that?
Bran Stark.
Oh, yeah. What happened to Bran on the journey?
Fuck you with this. I don't have time to explain the things. I don't have time to explain. It's difficult to explain if you don't even try, you son of a bitch. Yeah. Wait, I thought you said you were the Blood Raven. Yes, there was a Blood Raven. The other one died. The old ass, 100-year-old one died, and I'm the new
one. Right, explain.
Didn't even use a whole fucking sentence, you jackass. What the fuck? And also,
that made it to my notes, too.
Also, who, like, it's like they grabbed the dick stick and went him for, he was like a 3 on a 4, because, you know, Bran could be a little up his ass.
Yeah.
They just took that stick to 11 this episode.
Yeah, he comes back and he almost didn't feel like the same person that he
right.
was.
Right, he felt like Spock coming back from the dead, where he couldn't even fucking, you're trying to be humorous with me, Admiral. I don't understand this colorful metaphors. Fuck you, Bran Stark.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Bran, he is a different person at this point, right?
So, and that, like, is the three-eyed, I get it. That's the three-eyed Ravens. Well, I remember going off on this fucking same rant when he met the three-eyed raven for the first time. Saw this, you know, flowery metaphor and, you know, mystic bullshit when it seems like it's a fair, and that's, I guess that's the thing, like, anytime someone pulls this shit in fiction where it's like it's a zombie apocalypse. Like, what's going on out there? You wouldn't believe me if I told. Try me. Uh-huh. Try me.
Yeah.
You know? Jesus.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Bran.
I actually thought the best parts of the episode were the Cersei, Jaime, Olenna parts.
Yeah. Ooh, Olenna.
I mean, the whole, like, so capturing Ilaria and bring her back and having Cersei do her thing to Ilaria. I don't know about you. I know everybody hates Cersei. I hate Cersei as well. She's a horrible monster, as Olenna says. Mm-hmm. But she deserved to get some queen's justice here, I thought.
No, I get it. And I'm actually surprised at how well that scene worked, since like I didn't really give two shits for any of the characters. But I thought they were really wise to work the Oberyn angle, because even three seasons later, I still think Oberyn is dope. I love his character. I think he's awesome. It's a big what if. And bringing us back to where this is his lover, this is his child. Mm-hmm. Like, gave us the juice where, like, you know, if they hadn't nailed Oberyn, then, boy, yeah, it still would have worked, because I just thought Lena Headey was just terrifying.
Yeah.
And then when she pronounced the full weight of her judgment, where it's like, yeah, your child's going to slowly die, and then you're going to watch her moldering corpse, and you're going to have to stay here forever, and you're just going to think about all the bad things you've done, like, damn.
Yeah,
that's some cold shit.
I just wish that I hadn't instantly seen it coming. Instantly. I mean, the first frame of seeing Cersei on that screen with those big old pink lips.
Yeah, when she's got Molly Ringwald pretty in pink lips.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, she's going to use the same poison that Arya did. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. And it so obviously happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. It was a really, really good scene, though.
Right. And it's funny, also, the best work that Ilaria and her Sand Snake did were when they were gagged.
You think so?
Yeah,
it's because their dialogue has been so bad throughout the series.
They've given Ilaria some good moments back when Oberyn
was. True.
But I thought she was really good, and like, wow, I really felt the pain and helplessness. And and as Cersei was saying that stuff, it's like, it was totally hitting home. Like all the things, like, oh, imagine you felt really powerful and you killed my daughter, and now you feel no power at all. And how they then eventually mirrored those emotions with Olenna and Jaime at the end.
Yeah, and that's
like,
the thing.
Was some cold shit.
She's telling Ilaria here, like, oh, your Oberyn's problem was that he was gloating and then he was taunting the mountain. Well, she's doing the exact same thing. It doesn't bode well for her. You know, that she's down here doing the same thing in the dungeon.
Although I will say, I can't believe how well this war is going for Lannister so far.
Really, really well.
Like, and also, I feel like Tyrion, I don't know, maybe Jaime and Cersei learned a little bit more staying in the continent of Westeros and fighting through these wars, because Tyrion, he really misplayed his hand taking Castle Rock.
He did.
I mean, we knew that it was worth nothing. I wonder if he did, because that was something that... that was something that Papa Lannister dropped on Cersei.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Tyrion knew that the Lannisters are broke.
Yeah, I can't remember. But the thing that's brilliant about the Casterly Rock Highgarden switch up is that it kind of kills two birds with one stone, right? Like, it not only completely thwarts Tyrion's plan and surprises him and cuts the head off of their other ally, it also... I think gets them the means to repay the Iron Bank,
right? Because they are conspicuously showing, as Jaime was doing his victory walk, the Lannister soldiers, like, with an accountant's quill going over chests of gold. Did you see that in the background?
Oh, I missed that.
It's like chests and chests of gold and bars stacked up, and like, not only do they have the bread basket, but they now have the gold emporium.
Right. If you remember, the whole reason that the Lannisters Tywin was trying to ally himself with the people at Highgarden is the Tyrells. Is that the right?
Yeah, you got
the right family. I always get them and the Martells mixed up. The Tyrells is because they had, you know, the fields and the money that could help them.
Well, and it's also this cool thing where it's like, back I used to play this game in the mid 90s, this BBS game called Trade Wars, where it's this outer space game. You trade, you can rob, you can fight, whatever. And I was like playing a bad guy because you could go trade with a port until the port was out of goods, and then come and rob it and steal all your money back.
Okay.
And that's what the Lannisters have done. They've been borrowing vast sums of money and food and all this other stuff from the Tyrells, And then when they're at the end of the rope, they go and take him with their own dudes.
Yeah.
With their own dudes.
With Randall. Yeah.
It's some cold-blooded trade wars type of shit going on here in Westeros.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was brilliant because, you know, of course Tyrion knows his sister and brother very right. well, but they also know that he knows them, right?
Right.
So they use that to their advantage. And I didn't necessarily think they were this smart. I don't know where they picked up all the lessons they picked up. I get that Jaime is maybe a little bit better at the military stuff now.
Yeah.
After a couple defeats. But
I am very – I just don't know what to think about this. I didn't think Cersei had it in her.
Right.
And it could be that – because I don't think that – I wonder if in the books that Cersei's not as bereft of guidance as we are led to believe. And, you know, she still has some capable – because it just feels like that maybe for the sake of simplification, they've just, you know, boosted her IQ up a couple levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because she did, like, people, I mean, the Iron Bank guy came over and compared her favorably to Tywin. And, I mean, you asked me that 3 episodes ago, I would have laughed and not stopped laughing. But these last 3 episodes, she's earned it a little bit. I feel like
yeah,
it's too
when
fast.
She's at her most monstrous.
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple. I feel like her and Bran have changed so much in just a few episodes that it's. I'm still with them. I'm still with them, mm-hmm. but it seems hard to believe.
No, they've cranked the knob up on the pacing even a notch higher this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, Jon shows up at Dragonstone at the very beginning of the episode. So.
Yeah. And the problem is now, so everyone was bitching about Dany going to Dragonstone the first episode because, you know, she's got this huge army. She's going to be pinned in an island. If something happens, now all of her ships are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So we've essentially, Dragonstone is the new Essos.
It's a land war now.
It's the new Slaver's Bay. Well, yeah. It's a land war fought entirely by dragons mm-hmm. because that's all she's got now. And I guess she could go and attack Euron's fleet and burn that down, get the Unsullied, have him march. But Castle Rock is a decent ways away from King's Landing.
Yeah, they said they're on the other side of the continent,
yeah.
essentially.
And by the time the Lannisters get back from... I mean, it seems like everything's shaping for a big land battle to fight right in front of the Iron Throne, right there outside King's Landing. But as Jon Snow reminded us, this is all so much wasted time, which is the thing I was worried about in the preseason. Like, where are all the fights up north happening?
Yeah.
Because the Night's King is not... in a bitter intertribal struggle with his people to decide, like,
yeah.
Come on, guys, the real war's down south. I told you, I'll marry you later. You know, it's like, well, there's none of that shit going on.
Nope.
You'll get what you want. Just march south. It's like, I don't know. Also, I feel like Euron was punked a little bit by Cersei.
Punked how?
He's accepting a promise of
oh,
fealty.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's got.
Oh, the Lannisters always pay their debts, though. Of course.
Yeah, oh fuck, these Lannisters. So here's the thing. He's still got his ships. Those are the ships he started with.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his you know freaking niece. So yay for you. But you know who's got all the like gold and things you can eat and the stuff that's going to be valuable like a commodity. The Lannisters.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like Euron really got punked by Cersei, and he's got a verbal understanding with the queen that she'll marry him after this is all over.
Right.
I don't know, Euron. I thought you might be a smart guy.
Yeah, no, I never thought he was going to be a smart guy.
Yeah.
So.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You think Cersei's got a bunch of those fancy dragon-killing crossbows mounted on Euron's ships already?
On his ships? I don't think so. Although, my whole justification would be there hasn't been time, but what does time mean anymore in this show, you know?
Right.
So, perhaps. I always assume they were going to
By the way, all y'all
castle.
Emailing me about speculation about the Iron Bank come. We haven't heard from Iron Bank in, like, three episodes. Fuck you all. I'm guessing this was one of the production leaks. I accidentally let slip. Or did I?
Oh,
I'm pretty sure someone mentioned because a bunch of people emailed it into me. Hmm. Again, I thought it was suspicious. Like, haven't heard about the bank. Like, it's a fair point, but gee whiz, they haven't been relevant in the plot since, like, Stannis, you know, stormed the wall.
Right. I'm almost surprised it wasn't in the previously on, like, who this guy was when
right.
he shows up. They very quickly say Iron Bank, and
it becomes
apparent where he's from. But, yeah, we hadn't seen him in a long time.
I'm trying to think what else we want to talk about. I feel like we're missing
a lot on
the
There's
the
scene with
table.
Sansa and Littlefinger that I actually thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
And that quote we saw in the previous makes a lot more sense now.
Right.
In context.
Yeah.
About fighting every battle everywhere in your mind at all times.
So what battles are he fighting right now? Because, again, I don't see...
I think he's simulating it. I think very much like we saw the battle that could have been at Casterly Rock happening.
Uh-huh.
That's what's going on in Littlefinger's head at all times, right? He's
right.
looking at every angle and saying, if it plays out this way, this will happen. If it plays out this way, it'll go that way.
Right.
And he's trying to figure out in real time, like, all of the angles and see what his best move is.
Right.
Instead of, like, Jon just looking north or Dany just looking to the throne.
Right.
he's playing a deeper game. And I think that's good advice.
Uh-huh.
But coming out of his mouth, I don't want to take it. I don't want Sansa to listen to him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what his next level. I mean, what if he's just true blue for Sansa?
Yeah, that's always a possibility.
What if he's like, you know what? I'm so close to getting what I want, and what I want is to be powerful and rich by her side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick a side, and I'm going to champion it, and I've the die is cast, kind of. Like, there's no more, like, all my possibilities are collapsing into a singularity, and that singularity is Sansa. And if I see, that's the thing, is like, I don't know whether I believe it myself when I say Littlefinger winning the Game of Thrones without Sansa would feel like a loss to him. Is that true or false?
I think it's mostly true, but I also think he would take it.
Well, I think he would take it if he was convinced that there's just no way she's ever going to have him that way.
Mm-hmm. I think if it came down to he's got to choose either Sansa or the Iron Throne, he's choosing the Iron Throne.
Right. And I also don't, but I also don't see any kind of potential future where Sansa accepts him.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, she's capable of still taking advice and learning from him, mm-hmm. as she proved this episode, but I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
They're making a big deal about how there's not food, no food up north.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why. I wonder what they're going to do with that. Are they going to get sieged by the White Walkers? Like,
well, the White Walkers don't need the food. It's more like, I don't know.
No,
maybe it's
I mean, just locked into their own castle. Yeah.
Like, cause, I mean, that's one of the cool things, like, that might be a minor spoil. We'll talk about it in the spoiler section. But Sansa mentioned that, like, all, you know, this is something from the episode. Perhaps all of the North might seek Winterfell as a refuge,
right?
When
right.
the deep, deep, deep heart of winter comes,
yeah.
Perhaps they need to. Perhaps that will happen, and some other army from the south will have to break through with the supply of food at the last minute. Perhaps, I don't know.
Okay,
it seems like
sounds like production spoilers to me.
It's not. I felt like I don't know. It feels like that's heavy. Do I have to cut my own speculation?
No, I'm
okay,
kidding.
Because I feel
kidding,
like that
man.
Was underlined several times this episode. Okay.
Totally joking. Okay. What about the scenes with Sam and Jorah and the Maester?
I thought
those were mostly good.
Mostly good. I was surprised because I actually liked some of the theories I saw floating around about Sam getting kicked out of the Citadel. Because it's like, okay, right. Well, if you discovered the secret of Dragonglass, kind of, sort of, and you cure Jorah, because it does feel like right now things are really on a knife's edge with Dany and Jon.
Yep.
And I wonder if the fact that she kind of in a roundabout way owes Jorah's life to Jon. Because if Jon hadn't sent Sam to the, you know, all that stuff, that's nothing would have happened. I wonder if that might be something that kind of breaks their tension.
I don't know.
But it is frustrating because now Dany's stuck on, and like, I don't know. What's the solution to her advisors? Because it seems like she's a queen that can't use her dragons.
Yeah. I mean,
especially in the situation she is now, where she cannot be escorted.
She's too valuable to risk, or right. Too valuable to have away for a long, extended period.
Sounds like she needs just a badass suit of like super heavy fucking armor.
Yeah,
like 2-inch thick plate. She can't move in it.
Uh-huh.
It's like an Iron Maiden, and she just like sits. They strap her on top of Drogon, and she just screeches right. things at him. Dracarys, and he breathes
fire. I like
fire.
It. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I wouldn't think
and he turns
that
left.
She would be such a liability to her own battle, her own fight.
Yeah,
here. But yeah, she has control of the most powerful weapon in her army, and because only she controls it, she can't really use it until she's ready to make a full attack, which. That's what I'm worried about. Now that Tyrion has failed her twice, Tyrion's going to get thrown off the top of Dragonstone, right?
Something.
And she's just going to go be a dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really worried that she attacks King's Landing directly with those dragons and just starts roasting
and that's,
people.
That's the thing, as I was like doing this Littlefinger thing where I'm fighting all the battles all the time. Like, you know, if I play out my scenario and there's going to be some food train from the south, well, what if Dany burns that in her... You know, scorched earth campaign, and then
yeah,
like what do you do? Because you can't make more food, man.
No, nope.
I've played Agricola enough to know if you need 3 plates of food when winter comes. If you don't got 3 plates of food, you're gonna starve. It takes three plates of food.
Huh. So she dooms person. She dooms the kingdom.
I mean, that can't be what happened, but it seems like that's what they want us to think is going to happen.
Yeah. That seems like an interesting mirror with what happened over in Essos, right?
I wonder if Cersei will take, like, the food hostage. Mm-hmm. Like, she takes all the food and treasure, pulls it back to King's Landing, and just tells Dany, like, look, we're the only place that's got corn.
Yeah. We're you the only burn place us, you corn. Burn the food.
That's right. And then what are you going to do? It's winter. Right. It's winter. You're going to be queen of the dead.
It's like using half a million child and poor person shields. Like, how could Dany ever yeah. burn them, right?
It's all the small folk of the Seven right. Kingdoms being held hostage by bread. It's crazy, but I think it's something Cersei might do.
That's a good plan. That's monstrous enough for Cersei
That's
to do.
That's pretty damn monstrous. Pretty yeah. damn monstrous.
I like it.
What else? Did we cover everything? I feel like that we left a lot on the table.
Maybe so, but we've got a 2-hour podcast coming up on Tuesday.
We
so.
Do. That's the thing. I don't have to swing at every pitch here.
This is not exhaustive. It's just initial reactions, instant takes, perhaps.
Yeah. Some might say. Mm-hmm. Some might call them. All right, cool. Well, we will be back for that full take Tuesday afternoon. You got time to send me your takes, GameofThrones@baldmove.com. We also will be back Friday with our spoiler edition, where we'll talk about a whole bunch of stuff from the books, and you know, piece together trailer information, and you know, try to have some fun that way. I really like. Have you noticed that there's this like really cool motif that all of I don't know if they're all of her soldiers or like just her chief commanders, but like I saw notice on Missandei and Grey Worm that the silver headed like is three dragon heads, like an Ouroboros of three dragons eating each other.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty sweet.
Huh. I noticed Dany has a right shoulder.
She got the, yeah.
Like a pin with a couple of dragon heads on it. At least two, probably three.
I saw Missandei and Grey Worm. I don't know if Tyrion's got it or he's just you're content with the hand thing.
Yeah, he's probably a hand guy.
Getting another merchandising. Another merchandising yep. opportunity for HBO.
There you go.
But yeah, we'll be back for Tuesday and Friday of this week with more Game of Thrones goodness and lots of other stuff at baldmove.com. GameofThrones@baldmove.com for your feedback. See you back Tuesday.
See you then.
Hey, I want to tell everybody about the club, because without the club, you wouldn't be hearing this instant podcast right now, because we would have full-time jobs and we just have to go to bed after we watch Game of Thrones instead of staying up and producing a podcast about it. That and all the coverage. In fact, we have three Game of Thrones podcasts. The fact that we have first-run movies, which we just released a spoiler-filled review of Atomic Blonde this Thursday night. The fact that we get all the coverage of the shows that you love. The fact that we provide so many resources for the community and the forums. All that stuff is paid for by the club. And it's not just an altruistic thing. You also get a lot of cool features for yourself. If you go to club.boldmove.com, it outlines all the special audio and video bonus content, the ad-free fees, the special forum access, and right now for Game of Thrones, we're offering 25% of our annual memberships till July 31st, which is Monday.
Yeah, it's like a day away.
Just over 24 hours left in the sale to save 25% off your membership by going to club.baldmove.com. It helps us out. It's a ton of fun, and you can save some money. Check it out, club.baldmove.com.